We'll now move to case number four, Gonzalez versus O'Connell. Mr. Grimes.
Morning, may it please the court. James Grimes for the government. Your Honors, this is the government's appeal of the district court's decision to grant the habeas petition filed by Petitioner Gonzalez, in which he challenged the constitutionality of his civil immigration detention pending a final order of removal under 8 U.S.C. section 1226C. For two reasons, the district court erred in granting that petition. First, the district court erred as a matter of law when it held, contrary to Moore versus Kim from the Supreme Court, that Mr. Gonzalez had no available administrative remedies to exhaust. Second, the district court erred because its holding that it is unconstitutional to detain criminal aliens pending a final order of removal is contrary to this court's decision in Pera versus Perriman, and is contrary to the Supreme Court's decision in Moore versus Kim. Now, that's a deep exhaustion argument. In Kim, the Supreme Court recognized that regulations provide criminal aliens with the opportunity to challenge their civil immigration detention pending a final order of removal. In fact, those regulations provide aliens with the opportunity to raise the exact challenge that Mr. Gonzalez raised before the district court.
Well, in order to accept your argument, this court must also agree that the Kim decision applies to permanent legal residents, even if they contest that they are covered by 1226C, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And didn't the court explicitly state, and I quote, and this is from the Kim case, as respondent has conceded that he is deportable for the purposes of his habeas corpus challenge to 1226C at all previous stages of this proceeding, we decide the case on that basis.
The court did say that, Your Honor.
And you don't think there's any inconsistency there?
No, Your Honor, and I can explain why. The court in Kim, as this court did in Paris, said that detention pending a final order of removal is constitutional. The only difference is that Mr. Gonzalez did raise a challenge. But now we know from this court's decision in Gill and from the board's decision in Salazar that that challenge is without basis. He has not raised a substantive or a colorable challenge to the application of section 1226C to his case. After Gill, his assertion that it doesn't apply is essentially just a conclusory assertion that doesn't apply. He's in the same situation as, say, a criminal defendant who appeals his or her conviction and says that there was a constitutional violation but doesn't explain why. That's the same situation we have here. Saying that something is unconstitutional does not make it so. Saying that he wasn't convicted does not make it so. After Gill, we know that he was convicted. We know that there is no merit to his claim. We know, therefore, that section 1226C applies. And if just saying that section 1226C doesn't apply was enough to take an alien out of the ambit of Pera or of Kim, then 1226C would be meaningless. It would never apply because that would simply encourage every criminal alien to assert that it did not apply because they would have nothing to lose. They would be encouraged to do so. They wouldn't even be encouraged to claw the courts with frivolous claims that have no basis. In this case, we know that there is no basis to his claim that section 1226C does not apply because we know he was convicted because this court has told us so in Gill, interpreting the exact same Illinois provision, and the board has told us so in Salazar Regino. So we know that there is no colorable claim, no substantive claim, that section 1226C does not apply. I don't know if that answers Your Honor's question, but that is the government's position. And because Gill controls this case, the district court was, and because Gill and Salazar control this case, the district court was incorrect to differentiate this case from Pera on that basis. That is an invalid basis. Therefore, Kim and Pera must control the merits of this case. Now, in any event, we also believe that Mr. Gonzalez had the opportunity to exhaust this question. The exact question whether or not he has been convicted is something that the Kim court recognized could have been raised.
Let me get to that exhaustion because I have one question in that area as well. If we agree with your argument that Gonzalez should have exhausted his administrative remedies and therefore the district court improperly found that an appeal to BIA would have been futile, based on the fact that Gonzalez has not properly alleged a constitutional violation, does this court have jurisdiction under 1226E?
I believe the Supreme Court said that 1226E would not remove the court's jurisdiction. There was a difference of opinion on that, but I believe ultimately that is what the majority holding was with respect to Section 1226E. And I believe that, if I remember correctly, I may be incorrect, that this court in Paris did the same thing. But in any event, the Supreme Court in Kim recognized what the regulations provide. There is an opportunity to appeal the decision that Section 1226C applies to the board. Mr. Gonzalez's failure to do so should have foreclosed his claim. The district court erred in not dismissing on that basis as well. Mr. Gonzalez is essentially in the same position as the alien in Kim. In the Kim decision, the court noted, as Your Honor pointed out, that Mr. Kim, by not challenging the application of Section 1226C to his case, forewent, using the Supreme Court's language, a hearing at which he could have challenged the application of 1226C. Here, by failing to exhaust, by failing to avail himself of the opportunity to challenge the application of Section 1226C to his case, Mr. Gonzalez has given up the right to challenge that finding. Therefore, the district court erred in holding that Mr. Gonzalez had nothing that he had no available administrative remedy to exhaust. The claim that the board cannot address constitutional matters, we would partially agree with that. It's an overbroad statement, because the predicate question is whether or not the statute, Mr. Gonzalez has been convicted under the statute. And that question is a question of statutory interpretation, which the board could have addressed and could have foreclosed the need for the federal courts to even be involved. Thus, he could have exhausted this question and should have exhausted this question. Therefore, because the district court erred in finding that Mr. Gonzalez had no remedies to exhaust, because the district court erred in not following this court's decision in Para, and because the district court's decision is contrary to the Supreme Court's decision in Kim, this district court should be reversed. Unless there are any further questions, that concludes the government's opening remarks.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that Ms. or Mrs.? Is it Siddiq? Ms. And could you say your name again?
Siddiq.
Siddiq. Okay.
Siddiq.
Siddiq. Okay. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Sadia Siddiq, and I represent the petitioner appellee in this case, Mr. Carlos Gonzalez. This Court correctly touched upon the material fact which differentiates Mr. Gonzalez's case from the petitioner in the Kim case, as well as this Court's decision in Para, in that Mr. Gonzalez has not conceded his removability. Our position is that, first, the district court's decision was consistent with this court's case in Para. Second, the Supreme Court's decision in Kim turned on a material fact absent in Mr. Gonzalez's case. And third, the Gill decision is not dispositive of Mr. Gonzalez's challenge to his detention under 8 U.S.C. Section 1226C. First, to address the exhaustion requirements which the government has put forth. This involves a two-pronged question. First of all, did Mr. Gonzalez exhaust his administrative remedies? And second of all, was he required to exhaust any further administrative remedies? Our position, as the district court correctly found, is that Mr. Gonzalez did exhaust his administrative remedies. He was taken into custody pursuant to the mandatory detention provisions by the Immigration Service. They deemed him to be an aggravated felon. He then thereafter requested a bond redetermination hearing before an immigration judge. The immigration judge found that his arrest was an aggravated felony, and therefore the mandatory detention provisions of 8 U.S.C. Section 1226C applied to him. As such, because that provision clearly states that he shall be taken into detention, the immigration judge denied his bond.
So, was that hearing what you would consider a Joseph hearing, or did he seek a Joseph hearing?
Yes, Your Honor.
And was that hearing the Joseph hearing?
Yes, Your Honor, that hearing, his bond redetermination hearing, it is our position that that was similar to a Joseph hearing.
And what was discussed at the hearing and what was the scope of it?
The scope of the hearing was whether or not his crime constituted as an aggravated felony. And the court and the immigration judge did find that his crime was an aggravated felony. As such, the immigration judge never went into the merits of whether or not he was eligible for bond, how much that bond amount should be, etc., as indicated within a Joseph hearing context.
Doesn't the propriety and extent of the Joseph hearing affect your argument concerning the scope of the process Gonzalez has been afforded to date?
Your Honor, if I understand your question correctly, the Joseph hearing requirement was essentially exhausted by Mr. Gonzalez. The secondary issue was that whether or not he was required to exhaust an appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals after the immigration judge found that he was subject to mandatory detention provisions of 8 U.S.C. Section 1226C. As the district court correctly found, Mr. Gonzalez was not required to exhaust any further administrative remedies. That is because Mr. Gonzalez was not challenging to the immigration judge that his crime was somehow not an aggravated felony. Had he made that challenge, then yes, he would have been required to appeal that determination to the board. He was challenging that as a lawful permanent resident who has not conceded his removability, he is entitled, that his constitutional rights were implicated by his continued detention. An appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals in that context, which is also an administrative body and is bound by the language of Section 1226C, as the district court found, would have been futile in this case.
Is your argument, moving to a slightly different point, is your argument that 1226C is constitutional as applied to your client in particular, or is it that your argument is that it is unconstitutional as applied to your client's situation, that is, individuals not convicted of a felony or aggravated felony?
Yes, Your Honor, it is the latter, that Mr. Gonzalez, as applied to Mr. Gonzalez's situation as a lawful permanent resident who has not conceded his removability, that is a material fact which differentiates his case from that of the petitioner in Parra, as well as that of the petitioner in Kim. And as you pointed out, Judge Williams, the Supreme Court, in deciding the Kim case, said that its decision was predicated upon that basis, that petitioner had conceded his removability. We ask that this court find that is a material distinction which addresses the issue of whether or not he was required to exhaust his administrative remedies, as well as the issue of whether or not he can present a good faith challenge to his deportation before the district court. The Gill case was not present before the court when it made its decision. That was a decision subsequent to its decision. However, we do acknowledge that the Gill case does address his underlying issue of removability. However, the question remains whether or not the district court is required to determine the viability of an argument, or whether it is to determine the winnability of an argument. Mr. Gonzalez put forth a good faith, substantive argument before the district court, and even in light of the Gill decision, can presently also make a good faith argument.
Before your time runs out, I just want to ask you about the jurisdiction question. Do you think the court has jurisdiction to hear the case?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that this court does have jurisdiction to hear the case. However, in respect to whether or not he can put forth a good faith argument in light of the Gill decision, that the district court should be the court to determine that decision.
Now, how is this case a habeas corpus case if you argue that the statute is unconstitutional as applied to your client? Isn't applicability of the statute a completely different argument?
Your Honor, we're arguing that the statute does apply to Mr. Gonzalez's case because he has been deemed an aggravated felon. However, it is unconstitutional as applied to someone in his situation, given the fact that he has not conceded his removability. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, we'd ask that this court uphold the district court's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes, Mr. Grimes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will be brief. Mr. Gonzalez's attempt to distinguish his case from Kim and Gonzalez is foreclosed by Gill. He failed to take the opportunity to raise an appeal before the board. He has failed to raise a substantive claim that he's not been convicted before this court or before the district court. He's essentially in the same shoes as the alien in Kim. Therefore, his case is controlled by the Supreme Court's decision in Kim, this court's decision in Para, and the district court should be reversed. Unless there are any further questions, that is what the government asked this court to do.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.